Little Emily biting her sister, or is teenage Barry refusing to help around the house? Consulting psychologist David Carey joins us to answer all your parenting woes. My children were born through surrogacy 3.5 years ago using donor eggs. Because we know the importance of telling the truth about this to our children, we bought some children's storybooks on the topic and started telling them about it recently. We told them mummy's belly was broken and we went to a doctor to get help, and we met a lovely lady who could help us, and they put our baby into her tummy, etc. They love this story and seem quite content with it. However, I'm not sure how to contain what they know. I worry about when they start school that they will meet so many people we don't know, who don't know us and our story, and they'll start speaking of surrogacy to other children. We have always said to them that this is our business and we don't need to tell everyone about it, but kids are kids. I can't edit them. Is there anything I should do? I am worried about children who are very innocent being dragged into a topic at such a young age that their parents will not be prepared for. We are new to this neighbourhood, so know very few people. A bit more worrying is that they are born by donor eggs, and I really don't know how to deal with that. I know that, again, I should be honest, but I really worry about the complexity of this. Have you any advice?
Oh my God, the problems of the 21st century, yes, are so, yeah, complicated. Well, isn't it lovely that you loved and wanted children so much that you went through all that process and now you have two wonderful 3.5-year-olds? The cat is out of the bag and you cannot put it back in the bag. I wish I knew, and here's a question for this parent. Did you just tell your children about this, or did they ask about it? Because there'd be a big difference in the impact, depending on how it was handled. Mm. And we don't know. We don't know if they asked about, where am I from, or all those kind of childish questions that we often have difficulty answering. Or did you just decide, oh, they need to know at age 3, and so now I'm going to get them a nice book on surrogacy and talk about my broken tummy, et cetera, et cetera. Don't borrow problems from the future. Your children aren't in school yet, so it's not a problem for right now. You've already told them it's a private family thing. I think that's where you need to keep it. Leave it, park it, because the more you try to instill privacy around this and make it a secret, the more anxiety you can deliver onto your children. I think you'll have to deal with it when and if, that's capital I, capital F, it actually becomes an issue, Sean.
Yeah.
Because it's not an issue right now. And if you go down the road of saying these are private things, we don't talk about them outside of the family, that's not good for children. It raises their anxiety, causes them to wonder why things like this have to be secret, and then worry about telling someone. Inevitably in school, particularly primary school, there's some kind of business in the classroom about your family tree and where you came from and all that kind of stuff. And that raises issues for children born through surrogacy or children who have been adopted and don't know their lineage.
Yeah.
And teachers need to be very sensitive about this. I'm not quite sure that the old family tree lesson is appropriate for all children, and some thought needs to be put into the classroom syllabus before you just go down that road as an educator. So these are profoundly interesting questions and queries. We don't have a lot of research on the impact of children born of surrogacy in terms of their well-being and their psychological health as of yet. We can only assume that being reared in a loving family where one is nourished and well cared for protects you against mental health problems, protects you against academic problems, and protects you against behavioral problems. All those things are true, and we know that,
yeah,
for a fact. So let's stick with what we know. To this parent, I would say, put those thoughts and worries out of your head for the time being. Because it is not an issue for today, and I don't know that it will be an issue any more than the parent does. Perhaps there are other people out there who have experienced this and might want to,
yeah,
text in and let us know how they dealt with it, if indeed it was ever raised as an issue by their children born of surrogacy. I have no direct experience of it myself, to be honest with you, in terms of people I've seen over the years. So, just keep calm. Don't borrow problems from the future, please.
I suppose, could one say it's kind of roughly equivalent to adoption, the similar kind of issues that would be faced there?
I think so, yes, although we don't know, and this is a problem. This is also new, this huge cohort of children born to surrogacy, insofar as I'm aware, haven't been studied in terms of their psychological well-being longitudinally so that we know whether this has had any impact on them whatsoever. It's also a very complicated issue to study because there are so many factors that influence the development of one's personality. So we're really in uncharted waters here. Yeah. And I would encourage this parent, as I encourage all parents, please don't bring too many worries into today that don't exist yet. I meet so many parents that are worried about what will happen to her when she's 14 and 15. I don't want her to become a delinquent. I don't want her to be smoking cigarettes. I want her to finish. And the child can be six at the time they're worried about all of this. I understand all that as a parent. And of course, I worried about my two girls and still do. And they're all growing up. That's part of being a parent. But in a case like this, I think there isn't much you can do.
Yeah.
Except don't go down the shh. This is a secret. We don't talk about this because that really raises children's anxiety.
Actually, funny enough, the only talks we've gone into this so far is from someone saying, I have a daughter through donor egg, and I've always reiterated to her that it's a family secret, and she's never mentioned it to anyone, as she knows no different, as she's always been special.
Okay, well, I don't know what any of that means, but case by case, one can't make blanket assertions that things are always going to be damaging. Maybe I have to roll back on that a little bit. But I don't think secrets are great for children in general, to be honest.
Yeah.
But this is a family issue. You have to discuss it with your partner, and you have to come to some terms with how you wish to deal with it, and both of you can agree on exactly how to do it, and always make your interventions with the children developmentally appropriate. I go back to my first question, though. Did the children ask about this, or were they told about it before they asked?
I suspect that they were told about it.
It seems to be, but we don't know.
Yeah. My 24-month-old has speech delay. After continuous ear infections for 7 months, he was diagnosed with glue ear, and he had grommets inserted 2 weeks ago. He's been attempting more verbal interaction since his operation, but still limited to ah sounds. He refuses to repeat sounds or words, saying either ah or not attempting at all. I have three questions. Firstly, how can I help my child feel comfortable in attempting sounds? I reward any attempt other than ah. Secondly, he is due to move up to a group in creche, but should I delay this move? The creche suggested waiting until his speech is better, but I would have thought that being surrounded by peers interacting verbally would encourage him. I want him to be happy there, but I'm worried that his frustrations with speech will continue unless he somehow breaks the habit of saying ah. Thirdly, should I start intervention with the speech and language therapist or wait it out a while longer?
Let's take the questions in reverse order. Generally speaking, I'm very much in favor of early intervention. Try to get an assessment from a speech and language therapist who will, in their best clinical opinion, tell you whether the child needs intervention now. So let's leave that to the experts. The first question was, how do I get him to encourage the best to make other sounds? Well, of course, strongly encourage by smiling and nodding and gesturing and cuddling any attempt at speech, because that's what the child needs, to have all those potential verbalizations reinforced. And then let's play the game in terms of conversation with the child of say what you see. The child picks up a ball, and you say, oh, you've got a ball. Ball. And if the ball is blue, you say, you have a blue ball. Blue. You make speech sounds. You play with the sounds of speech. We call those things phonemes. And that will encourage speech development. The child has what we in Ireland call glue ear. Medically, that's called otitis media. So therefore, the speech centers of the child's brain, I'm going to assume in the left temporal lobe, that's usually where it is, weren't stimulated properly. So the whole business of building up the sounds of speech, phonemes and phonological awareness, aren't solidified yet at the neuronal level. You can do that by playing all kinds of sound games. If the child's name is David, you can break it down into two syllables. David, David, and you can clap the two syllables out. There's a lot of things you can do to stimulate phonemic awareness and to stimulate speech. But most importantly, get yourself to a speech and language therapist. The other question was, should I bring my child to creche or not? I see no reason why not.
Yeah.
It's generally good for children who have speech delays to be surrounded by other children who speak. That stimulates phonemic awareness. It stimulates the language centers in the left temporal lobe. And it's good, a good process to develop the beginning of speech. It will come. It will come. Don't worry. But try to get to a speech and language therapist. Kind of important.
Now, obviously, this is a 24-month-old, so there is obviously a delay there.
Yes.
But just for babies in general, how do you know what is an attempt at speech rather than just a random noise? Because babies, you know,
well, all random noise is an attempt at speech.
Ah, right. Okay. Fair enough. Because when they're just going, ooh, wow.
Nothing wrong with that, actually, because we know that baby talk, ooh, witty bitty, coochie butchie, is good for stimulating the language centers of the child's brain. It's sound going in. It builds neuronal connections that will eventually mature and begin to develop into phonemes and syllables and what we call speech. And having concrete objects there is always a good thing. Cup, cup, show and tell, show and name. Remember, listeners, the brain is visual. It's a highly visual thing. A cup as a word in the absence of a cup means nothing.
Yes.
To the child. So we show and tell, we repeat what they did, we label, we play speech and language sounds. Yes to preschool, see no problem there. However, possibly there can be a problem, and this is where some careful observation. If a child has a speech and language delay that's significant, they cannot talk about their emotional life. They can't articulate how they feel. They have to act it out. Significant speech and language delay, communication delay, is always also potentially a behavioral difficulty. So we need to watch and observe, make sure the creche is aware of this. They will stimulate, they will watch, they will interpret, they will intervene when difficulties arise. All will go well, I think.
Alan says, this is on the subject of surrogacy and how much you should tell the child and at what stage. Alan says, we use books to talk to our daughter about her mother's breast cancer. We talk about it freely at home so as not to make it all the more scary. We talk to the teachers in the school to prep them too. If any parent comes to challenge us because we chose to tell our daughter the truth, they had better watch out. Children are too smart to try and pull the wool over their eyes and deserve to be able to express themselves and be proud of who they are and where they come from, says Alan. Is he necessarily comparing like with like, though?
Absolutely not. These are two different things completely, yeah.
Because, in a way, if there's cancer in the family, you need to start telling people.
Yes. Yeah, now, Alan has made a very good point, however, that bibliotherapy, the use of books, is incredibly appropriate for children. Through all kinds of life's twists and turns and dilemmas and successes and joys as well. So I'd be very much in favor of that. I have to go back to my first question about surrogacy. Were the children just told or did they ask? Sometimes in our, now in terms of medical conditions, that's a different thing. So let's leave that aside. In terms of surrogacy and adoption issues and whatnot, you can sometimes drop it into the soup a little too early.
Yeah.
And you have to be very sensitive to the developmental level, particularly the emotional development of your child, before you just think, oh, now is the right time.
Yeah. I have four-year-old boy and girl twins that are a disaster at mealtimes. Both are really excellent at trying new things and have good varied diets. Neither are particularly fast at eating, but my boy is dreadfully slow. Breakfast can take 40 to 50 minutes, and that's just to eat a bowl of porridge. There is the odd exception when they eat like normal people, but that's few and far between. Dinner takes the same length of time. There are definitely some dishes they like more than others, but that rarely seems to matter because even if it's their favourite thing, it still takes so long to eat dinner. When my boy is messing and time has dragged on, I do things like make an agreement about how much he will eat and take the rest off the plate. Or I might ask, is he finished and can I take the plate? He always goes mad when I try and take the plate and wants to hang on to it. They sit opposite each other and I don't allow toys at the table. He's always itching to get up and distracted and playing with his food and cracking jokes to the sister. Often I end up spoon feeding and playing games like pretending to steal food off his plate just to encourage him to eat and end the hell of dinner time. Is there anything I can do?
This is a case for haute cuisine in the family home. Small portions on a big plate.
Yeah.
You know, because you're probably putting too much in front of him at one time and the sight of it turns him off. And he just, his brain tells him, oh my God, you'll never finish all of that. Start with a smaller portion. Let him eat it. ask him if he wants more. If he says yes, give him another small and perhaps smaller portion.
Mm.
Ask him if he wants more. When his brain apostat, as they call it laughingly sometimes, tells him he's full, then he's full.
Yeah.
So you're just going to have to make some adjustments. To me, the solution is rather pragmatic, and perhaps I'm being too simplistic. Dinner time should not be hell time. Expecting 3- and 4-year-olds to sit for 45 minutes and eat dinner for most children is too long a period of time, but it isn't for this fellow.
Yeah.
And I'm really wondering if there's just too much food on the plate for him and it's turning him off instantly.
Yeah, it's also interesting because that question started with the boy and girl twins are a disaster, but then the rest of the question was really saying that he's the disaster.
It's not good to be the child who is the disaster. Parent, I think you can probably solve this one. Go down the smaller portion route, see what happens. Big plate, small portion. Decorative kind of dishing it out into little smileys and things. We like when we go to the restaurant, we talk about presentation and how the food was presented. Food is a visual feast, an olfactory feast, and a taste feast.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So give him some, what do we do with children and pancakes at the IHOP back in America? Comes out with two little raspberry eyes and a half a banana smile or something, It visually is appealing to the child and they like to look at it. Just experiment a little bit. I think you can solve the problem.
Okay, chefy it up a bit might help. I am worried about my daughter and how she treats her 8-year-old brother. I've been told by a stranger in the past that they saw her bullying him, the stranger's words, and that he was just sitting quietly and she was treating him as if he was misbehaving. This was in a cafe where I was meeting them, and they had been there for a while. They had finished eating and gone on to the school concert. I stayed on to finish my food when this woman approached me to tell me what she had seen before I arrived. I was worried for a while, but did nothing about it. But now I've been confronted again by this problem, which I saw this time with my own eyes. While I feel, in the face of most other people's criticism, that I overreacted to any criticism of him, I feel I must get advice.
Wish I knew how old the daughter was.
Yeah, well, she's old enough. They're old enough to be in a cafe by themselves, obviously. So
yeah, that's so. The daughter may be a teenager or something.
Mm.
So a parent came up to you, or a woman came up to you and told you the daughter was bullying your son. You have no context for this. You don't know what he may or may not have done before. Perhaps she was being a little too harsh for him. Now you have and you ignored it. Okay, that's probably not a bad thing to do because you lack the context. You have no way of knowing, and you don't want to become the investigating detective on a case like this, because you'll never find out what the truth was from either of them.
Yeah.
But now you've seen something with your own two eyes. Then now it is time to tell the older daughter that it's time for her to act like the older sibling, to set a model for her brother, to protect him and look after him, to correct him when he does wrong, but to correct him in the way mom or dad corrects him, through the use of words and maybe a little bit of direction on how to behave properly. She shouldn't be upsetting and unnerving him. So I think it's time for a chat with daughter and lay down the guidelines here. Mom and dad, or whoever the parents and guardians are, if there are two, are the ones that deal with children. Be kind to your brother. Absolutely no harsh language. No hitting, pushing, or shoving. Don't ever take his dignity away. Correct him when he needs correction and help him to behave properly. And then let us know and we'll step in and do the rest.
Mm. Yeah, it mightn't be a huge problem.
I don't think this is.
Yeah, yeah.
We have two incidents. One that one woman saw and felt strongly enough to comment about. But we don't know what happened.
Yeah.
And so we have to, nothing we can do there. But then mom saw something else with her own eyes. And that's when you step in.
Yeah.
Because the sooner you step in, the more likely you are to prevent the problem from continuing, and getting worse.
I have a very sociable 4-year-old who plays and interacts well with children of all ages and with his teachers. So what's the problem? But with adults, he can be so rude. He hides away from them, ignores them, and makes no eye contact. This seems to be with family members especially. How do I combat this, especially when I'm not always there?
Gee, I don't know about this one now. He's very sociable and interacts with children of all ages and with his teachers, but with adults he can be so rude. Well, that's a sweeping statement because his teacher's an adult.
Yeah.
So he's not being rude to teacher, just to other adults. This could be a result of shyness. He avoids and averts eye contact. I think that needs a little bit of observation. Does he avoid eye contact with you, the parents, with other people in general? Does he make eye contact with teacher? It's with family members especially. Are family members kind to him? Does he feel uncomfortable around them? There's just too much unknown here, Sean, for me to approach it definitively. How do I combat this? Well, there's a little thing you can do to help people in general who have problem with eye contact. And that is you take a little round sticker and you put it just above the middle of your eyebrows there. Mm-hmm. You know how the Indian people have that red dot at the highest chakra in terms of their spiritual beliefs? And you ask the child to look at that dot when they're talking to you, because if you look at that dot, I'm looking at you right where that part is, the receiver can't tell that you're not looking them in the eye. Some children and some adults find it really aversive to look in people's eyes.
Yeah,
we all say that all the time. Don't stare. Have you ever played the game of walking down the footpath and make eye contact with a stranger and maintain it just to see how they react?
Yeah.
You know, and people get uncomfortable with that. Mm. It's not part of our culture, really. We don't really like intensive eye contact. So a little bit of training of this boy may be useful.
Right. Okay. Just a few texts here on some of the things that we have been talking about with David. Texter says glue ear is often caused by food intolerance, dairy in my case. A simple test is all that's needed to rule that out. So for parents of the little boy, you should try it. Laura in Cork says, because we did have a question about a 24-month-old. She says, a 24-month-old is a 2-year-old. Time to give up on the old months, I'd say. My daughter Polly is one and a bit. People are mad to keep them babas forever. Fair point. Anne in County Clare says, my now 10-year-old has had delayed speech and had grommets in his ears when she was 3.5. She had speech and language therapy after. She doesn't stop talking now. Going through it again with our second little girl who's 3. She had grommets last January. Her speech is coming on slowly, but I know we'll get there. David is spot on. Lots of stimulation, giving choices to force them a little to use words. For example, do you want an apple or a banana? Lots of patience here.
Good idea.
What about using signs for the child with glue ear? My son and his wife used it to help a similar problem with their child, says Jer.
No, wouldn't be in favor of that. The goal here is to facilitate and increase the emergence of spoken language, expressive language.
Right.
No signs.
Right.
Choices have just been said, and the other suggestions I made are the way to go.
We have always been open to our daughter that she's from a donor egg, using books and talking. This has become the norm for her, though we don't broadcast it, but she doesn't feel any different to anyone else, says a texter. So there's another account of that kind of experience. And going back to the twins, but it seemed to be the boy twin who was the slow eater. Texter says, it takes me 30 minutes to eat a bowl of porridge in the morning. I was always a slow eater. My mother told me. I didn't know it was a bad thing. I'm 48.
It's, you know, generally speaking, I think most physicians would say better to be a slow eater than to gulp your food down.
Mm.
So no harm there. But it does cause problems. So you have to manipulate the timetable.
Yeah.
And apart from portion size, as I suggested, maybe starting him a little earlier, particularly in morning time when you have to get them off to school and you have to leave for work, give him an extra 10 minutes ahead so that he can finish on time with everyone else.
Listen in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. here on Moncrief for more parenting advice from David Carey.